You're listening to the Mother of All Solutions podcast, conversations about careers and caring for today's parents.
Hello, my name is Katie Marks. I'm a mum to two boys and I'm director of Citizens Design Bureau Architects. And I also am director of Una Bra, which is a bra for women who've had a single mastectomy and don't want to wear prosthetics.
So welcome, listeners, to Mother of All Solutions. Hope everyone's doing well. Delighted to be speaking to Katie Marks, who I know professionally, first and foremost, but most recently I've been discovering other aspects of Katie's life and work. So we're going to explore that a bit further. So hi, Katie.
Hello.
How are you today?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. We're both on work break, so it's a bit kind of crazy for both of us. So, thanks for taking the time. And on that point, like, start by telling me where you are. Like, tell the listeners, like, what's your workplace? Where are you?
I'm sitting in my office in Hackney. It's a busy time for us. We're a team of six people in the office at the moment. And juggling lots of different projects, both architectural and fashion related.
Yeah. Okay. So the architectural stuff that I know you for, how long have you been an architect? And Katie, I was quite intrigued when I heard you on your Woman's Hour interview say that you were an architect by trade. And I thought that was a really just interesting phrasing of being an architect, by trade. So yeah, tell us more about being an architect.
I think that when I say architect by trade, that was also because I was on Women's Hour in a different guise. So I was also sort of reflecting on the fact that sometimes the work we do comes to us. So this role around making the bras is something that I wouldn't have been doing unless I'd had cancer and all of that happened to me, and I decided to do something with it. Whereas the architecture is obviously something that I decided to do consciously and work with a team on who are here. So we do all kinds of things. So that might include museums, it's housing, it's exhibition design. We're also working on a visitor centre for the National Trust at Shugborough Hall in Staffordshire, all kinds of different things, really. So there's a lot going on, there's a lot to juggle.
So as an architect by trade or by decision, obviously that's been a real focused effort for you, right? I mean, to study and qualify to become an architect is quite a journey in itself. So I just kind of keen to explore that a bit more, because even though I know quite a bit about the people and how architecture operates, I'm sure a lot of our listeners maybe from different backgrounds, different walks of life, and maybe for them just that kind of revealing of it. So you run your own business and you said you've got a team of six, but I assume you worked in other practices before setting up, or what was your journey to becoming the businesswoman architect? Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting actually, because studying architecture is very, very long. And after you do an undergrad degree, you have to do a year out, which is like work experience really, but in an architecture office. That happened to coincide for me with the World Summit on Sustainable Development that took place in Johannesburg in South Africa in 2002. My year out was in 2001. And basically, I'd been doing quite a lot of work with friends who are not architects around sort of environmental and social justice issues. And that was something that really interested me. So I did my year out actually not doing architecture, or not strictly architecture. I went to South Africa, invited by the United Nations Environment and Development Forum. We ended up working in Soweto in one of the townships outside Johannesburg. In a way, it was sort of not really sort of orthodox, I guess, in the way to go through architectural education. But for me, actually, it was really reflective how I want to work, how I do work, that it's a combination of architectural practice, which is about buildings and spaces and materials and craft and people, but it's mm-hmm. also about, you know, the wider world and how we see our futures and what we think architecture and design thinking contributes to that. So it's very mm-hmm. important to sort of combine those things. It's not just about sort of the nuts and bolts and how it looks, you know, it's very much mm-hmm. about what it does, who it's for, and what legacy it leaves, what message it brings.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. And I hadn't realized you'd sort of started on that kind of thought process so early on, so it's like, again, another sort of layer to what you do that's being revealed that I'm really interested in. So that kind of environmental social side of architecture that you've brought through your career, I assume you had to do some of the more, as you called it, orthodox type of architecture to kind of complement your ambitions. Yeah,
then I came back to the UK and I did my master's in Cambridge. And instead of doing the normal sort of what's called the part two course, which is a diploma in architecture, I did a master's in environmental design and then my diploma in architecture. So it was okay. Sort of combination again, reflecting, yeah, my interests really.
Yeah,
again,
yeah, yeah.
That's sort of great. Been woven into all of our work ever since.
Yeah, and it's I suppose it's what you've built your reputation and stance on and, you know, winning awards on as well. And so kind of it's great that it's all come together for you. And then when did motherhood come into it, Katie? You mentioned your boys, you've got two boys. I've never met your boys. So, like, how old are they? You know, what are they?
So
who are they?
They are 11 and 13.
Okay.
I was working at Howth Tompkins when I had them. Oh no! When I had Rudy, my eldest, and I was working on the Everyman Theatre in Liverpool, which was really lovely. Because
I've never visited it. I'd love to go.
Yeah, well, it's my home city. I'm from Liverpool, and so it was amazing to work on, you know, on something in my home city. I'd been working on that project for years. I mean, these projects take years. So that'd been a kind of long haul project. And then I had Rudy, went back to working on it. And then halfway through, when the building was on site, I got pregnant with my youngest, Jakob. And that was a slightly joyously accidental pregnancy. And Steve Tompkins, who was the director of Howth Tompkins, who I was working with, was a little bit peeved with me for suddenly, you know, getting pregnant again.
It's almost finished, this project.
Yeah.
Oh, come on.
Anyway, so then I went off on maternity leave. But when Jakob was like a month old, Steve called me and was like, "Oh, can't you just come back and finish this off?"
Oh my goodness. Okay.
And I was like, you know what, I just, you know, I've got a tiny baby, I can't just come
and
back.
A toddler,
yeah, I just can't just come back to work. But I tell you what, here's the deal, I will work on it, but only if I can do it under my own name, under my own steam, sort of thing.
Oh really? Okay.
So I'll do like the interiors and signage and furniture and stuff like that.
Okay.
And you know, what do you say? And he was mm-hmm. very generous and agreed to sort of basically let me do it kind of under my own name, obviously with you know, I was still working with them, but yeah,
wow.
So that I could be independent. And that was, you know, I think that in a way was sort of like the launching of Citizens Design Bureau as an architecture practice. And I'm very grateful for their sort of generosity in supporting me doing that.
Wow. That is such a great maternity leave return story, because that could have ended in disaster for everybody,
yeah.
right?
Well, what was really nice was that because I'm from Liverpool, my mum's in Liverpool, and I was breastfeeding, and I was going up to Liverpool, and I would obviously be spending the day on site and like packing in lots of meetings and inspections of work mm-hmm. and stuff like that. And I'd get my mum to come to the site gate sort of site hoarding, pass Rudy over the
pass Jacob
over the gate. She'd pass him back. I'd have a feed, pass him back to her. And then we'd do that sort of three times in the day.
Wow. And, the logistics of it, right?
Yeah, but it only worked, you know, because I had my mum there who could look after him. But actually that was a really lovely way to come back to work and also be doing something that was really like close to my heart and be able to put my own name to it. You know, when I got the Sterling Prize and things like that was really, really nice. And really, I'm really grateful for that. And it's been a lovely way to launch a practice.
I mean, I would love to spend much longer talking about your life as an architect and all the things you've done in your practice. But, you know, we're very much kind of going to look at the here and now and what you're doing alongside the practice with regards to Uno Bra. So obviously the story behind it is you went through breast cancer yourself and had a mastectomy and have now launched a new range. Do you want to tell me more, tell the listeners more about it? Like, some people may have read it or heard about it, but others might be sort of new to it.
Yeah, so, you know, it's been a hard few years. And, you know, I set up my practice in 2012, my architecture practice. But as I said, you know, I had a newborn baby. So I didn't really do any kind of private work for about 9 months a year after I sort of set it up in an official way. And then, you know, it takes a few years to sort of really drum up kind of big projects, meaty projects.
Yeah.
You know, I had quite a few things like, you know, house extensions and stuff like that. But by 2016, you know, I'd really been working hard, had two little kids, I was really exhausted, but I really felt like I was just about getting somewhere. We'd just won a huge competition, an open competition to design the new Manchester Jewish Museum, Jackson's Lane Theatre, a talent house for East London Dance, and, you know, all kinds of really nice, nice projects we'd just won. And then a few months later, I was diagnosed with breast cancer. And so that just felt like absolute sort of collapse, you know, and you really have to take stock and sort of work out what the bloody hell am I doing, you know, should I even carry on, should I just shut it all down and go up a hill and meditate, you know.
And that was 2016, Katie.
It was the beginning of 2017. So that was, you know, a real shock to the system. And then, you know, I had to go through chemotherapy, radiotherapy, surgery, all of that. All the while, you know, I'm trying to keep my practice going. We've won all these jobs and we have contractual obligations and, you know, trying to just keep afloat in that way whilst being very ill was just, you know, horrible.
A lot.
And then... You know, and then it came to trying to get back to some sort of form of normality afterwards. And then, of course, you realize actually that doesn't exist. You can't go back to normality. You have to find a new normality because you really, it changes you, changes your perspective, changes your priorities. And I also was trying to get used to a new body, you know. It looks different. It looks quite weird. It's wonky. And there's a bit missing. I sort of realized that everything that, you know, I could go into the shop and buy clothes and stuff, it was all about trying to make me look normal in the eyes of other people.
Yeah. And you're before normal.
Yeah. And I just thought, you know, I'm the one that's got to sort of live with this body forever now. I don't want to feel like I've got to wear a costume that pretends this hasn't happened. I don't want to have to sort of be intimate with the lights off. I don't want to be scared of my own body. I don't want to be sort of massively inhibited. You know, I've got enough to deal with. I just want to feel comfortable, you know, with myself, but I had nothing to wear. Because all of the post-surgery underwear that exists for women assumes that you will wear a prosthetic prosthetics are uncomfortable.
And is that for double or and single? Is that, would that be the norm for both?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, obviously, if you have a double mastectomy, you're flat, so you don't need
you're not lopsided,
In quite the same way, although lots of women want to wear something. But obviously, if you I've got a double F cup. I needed a bra, I just didn't want to wear the prosthetics. You know, you can imagine it's kind of plasticky thing. It feels a bit sweaty, horrible. It just moves around. Even if it's sort of tucked into a little pocket within a bra, the bra is not stuck to you. You know, it's sort of never sits.
Conscious of it. Yeah.
You're constantly conscious of it, and it just feels really awkward and a bit odd. I just didn't want to have to do that. But I felt very weird because I have never walked down the road and seen any other woman with one breast.
Yes.
It's not something that you see. And yet there are
many
hundreds
women,
of thousands of women in this country who look like this, and yet you've not seen any of them. And I just thought that was really odd that we're all hiding. And I felt, oh God, am I the only person that feels like this? I just couldn't work it out. It just seemed like, you know, you look at the statistics of how many women this affects, and then you just consider your own experience of walking down the street and having not seen anyone who's asymmetric. And it just felt really like something odd is going on, you know? So I just in the end thought, well, if I can't find anything to wear, then I'll just have to make it myself.
Wow.
And that's what I started doing. And it's been a really long, hard slog to do that. It's very, very difficult and costly to make lingerie because, well, for many reasons, but, you know, it's a piece of engineering. You know, breasts are strange shapes and they're not the same from breast to breast.
They're very unique
to different women, but also, you know, if you think of the size variables, you've got 32, 34, 36, 38, 40, you know, whatever, and then it's A, B, C, D, E, F, G, and then add to that the variable of a left cup or a right cup. So just for, you know, 32A, left, right, 32B, left, right, 32C, 34A, but, you know, so just to create one style, you have to have, you know, about 40 sizes.
Yeah. So and templates
and you have to test them all on different women, and every time you make a tiny little tweak iteration to the pattern, you have to make all the samples and test them all again in all those sizes. So it's been a very, very long process. It's taken me over 2 years, and cost an awful lot of money. I got the bit between my teeth, and I really felt like this was something that just has to be in the world. I've actually since realized and at the same time as I've been developing things, other people have been developing, you know, having similar ideas about, you know, this is crazy that there isn't something for women like us. So I'm actually kind of happy that there's, you know, other people thinking in similar ways, but I suppose I haven't seen one that is as sort of proudly asymmetric as what I'm creating. It's got one strap, it's got one cup, and then flat on the flat side. I just wanted something that is not trying to look like something quote unquote normal, but is just actually really elegant in and of itself. And also sort of functional.
It looks really like cool.
Thank you. It's, you know, when you have surgery, you get a lot of swelling. You need to sort of have even compression across your chest. Whereas when you buy a normal mastectomy bra or normal bra, you've got that very tight elastic at the bottom, which actually stops the sort of all the fluid buildup in your chest from just like flushing through your body. So it was for medical reasons, it was for aesthetic reasons, it was just for kind of sort of political reasons as well. I was just like, this is ridiculous. why is there so many of us? Why is there nothing for us to wear?
It's just a kind of bold response to it, right? It's like, I am going to be proudly asymmetric, or yeah.
Yeah, and it's really difficult because, you know, I'm an architect, I run my own practice. I actually have no interest in being known as one boob woman for the rest of my life, you know. And now I'm like plastered across the Times and Radio 4 and all kinds of other things in my underwear, which is a very strange feeling. I'm quite aware that, you know, when people Google me, I'm not sure whether they'll get a picture of a building or a picture of my boobs, you know, which is very odd situation to be in. And yeah, it's certainly not one sort of, well, it sort of is by choice, but not entirely. But I guess, yeah, I'm just sort of coming to terms with that.
Yeah, like this new presentation of yourself. Because, yeah, of course, you're putting yourself out there. You're telling your story as well as the product, right?
Yeah, and also you don't want to be defined by that. It's just something I thought should happen. It should exist.
Yeah.
But it's something that, you know, we're all multifaceted. We're not sort of one-hit wonders. So, you know, I'm doing this bra, but I want it to be also for other women to feel like, yeah, they don't have to be defined by this. You can just get on with life, you know.
From the images I've seen, and obviously it's not just you modeling the underwear, there are other women wearing it. Obviously they're images, but the presentation it shows to me is like very content with themselves physically, and like kind of, you know, showing their bodies and their personalities and their faces, and everything that's presented in those images is a really positive message. And
yeah, I hope
I'm
so.
Sure. Yeah, well, that's what it's coming across as. So
no, that's really nice, because, you know, sometimes when you see things about, you know, a lot of people talk about breast cancer, it's often in the news, and you often see things on TV and like fashion shows or stuff like that, and it's a lot about, oh, they're so brave, and you know, there's a lot of pity and a lot of sadness, which of course a lot of it is sad, and people have a really hard time. But actually, you know, in a way, bravery is a really difficult word, because bravery suggests a choice, and you don't have a choice, you just have to get on with it. So I really wanted to just make something that didn't feel like, oh, the poor cancer ladies have now got something that they can wear if they don't want to wear a prosthetic, you know, poor them. I really wanted to make something that's just confident and that still looks cool, and just, we just take our place among all the other bodies of different shapes and sizes, and just say, you know, here, this is another type of body. And, you know, it's interesting, because when in 2012, you know, when there was the Olympics and the Paralympics, we saw, you know, kids in the street saying, okay, you be blind, I'll be the guy with the blade, you be in a wheelchair, let's have a race, you know. And it was just, it was cool. And nobody, you know, when you saw people running on blades, it's like, they're not using a prosthetic to hide what's happened to them.
Yeah,
they're using
it's very visible.
To be functional, to be cool, you know. And it was, and I just thought, yeah, like, why are we using these prosthetics to hide and pretend nothing's happened? When you look at other amputations, because it is an amputation, but it's not called that for some reason. But nobody makes you feel like you should hide that it's happened, but there's something unusual about breasts,
because it's breasts
that makes people feel like they have to pretend. It's weird, it's odd, there's not really any explanation for it, other than there's just this sort of societal pressure about what it means to be a woman, what it means to look like
and to
a
have
woman.
The perfect breasts, whether they're you know, they're perfectly pert and perfectly average and perfectly, you know, not too small, not too big, not too misshaped, or
I just thought, you know, bloody hell, that's sort of a bit medieval, you know, we're in the 21st century, why are we thinking like this? It just seems so old-fashioned and destructive, actually, as well, because it's very difficult to move on and find a new normal if you're being forced to try and fit into a normal mold that doesn't fit your body. If that's now your normal, is that you're trying to conform constantly to something that's impossible for you, it's like, what an awful situation. You know, you shouldn't be made to feel like your body is just sort of permanently inadequate, so that you have to wear this weird costume thing to make yourself feel acceptable to the world.
That's quite interesting, holding the other options before costumes. That's interesting that that's how
it felt to me. I mean, you have to be really careful about it, because I think it's really important that women's choices to have reconstructions are really respected. It's really important that people have a choice, because for some women, they just really, really want a reconstruction. It really works for them, and that's brilliant. So I wouldn't want to ever give the impression that I think doing that is bad. Or that wearing prosthetics is bad, or somehow, you know, not towing the feminist line or something. Because, you know, everyone has got their own thing going on. But it just felt really strange that the decision not to wear a prosthetic, not to be symmetrical, is just completely unrepresented. It's unseen. It's invisible.
Yeah, and when I heard you talk about the Uno Bra when you were like officially launching it in Women's Hour and places like that, you were obviously explaining some of the practicalities about reconstruction, which I have not been through any reconstructions or experiences like this, so I was completely ignorant to it. And a lot of what you were talking about were very practical decisions about that choice. Like you were saying, you're an F cup, so to reconstruct would have been quite a massive feat with the skin regrafting and different things. It wasn't just a case of this is an easy thing to do, I can be reconstructed. You know, there was lots of layers to those choices, right?
Absolutely,
it's great what you've gone and done. I'm like so impressed that you're doing it alongside family life and running of an architect's practice, and it's now out there, so people can buy the Uno Bra now, right? This is
so we started by just selling to our mailing list, just to sort of, you know, test the water, see what demand was, and we sold out within a couple of days, which is amazing.
Well done.
Now we're actually going to launch our website so that it's just open for the public to buy.
Yeah.
But we're going to be doing it in batches to order, so that we have no waste. We're making it in the UK. So we're going to be making it in sort of small limited editions every 6 weeks or so.
Just keep it going.
Yeah. So that we can be a bit more nimble as well, so that we can sort of get feedback if people want different colours or, you know, different styles and things like that, rather than just make some kind of huge quantity, you know, in a factory in China. We want to just be a little bit more nimble and responsive.
And have you got somebody like working exclusively on this?
So I mean, the only person sort of permanently working on it is me. I have someone helping me, Sarah Raschino with patterns. She's working as a consultant to me, and Amy McWilliams, who's helping me with just like generally sort of lingerie branding and all kinds of things like that. I've got a workshop in Wales actually, who are manufacturing all the products.
Amazing. Well, I will put all these links in the show notes of the episode. I'm sure the listeners to this will like really appreciate what you've done to, you know, to adapt and embrace your normal or your new normal post mastectomy, and it's so impressive, and your work is so impressive. So I'll put the links to your practice as well, so people can see the buildings, not just the body, right?
What a line.
I know it sounded so cheesy when I said
but that's kind of what it is. That's why it's like slightly confronting for me at the moment, but
And as well as the show notes, Katie, do you want to like say the Instagram handles?
So it's at underscore Uno Bra. So underscore UNOBRA. And it's at Citizens Design Bureau.
Amazing. Katie, it's been lovely to speak with you.
Thank you so much. Sorry about all the funny rustling.
No, it just adds the atmosphere. And you're a busy working person. So, you know, this is what life is. So thank you, Katie. Thank you, everyone, for listening to Mother of All Solutions. I hope you've enjoyed learning a bit more about Katie. Do keep in touch with the podcast. I'm on Instagram as @solutionsmother, and you can connect with me that way and subscribe for future episodes. Thanks, everyone. Take care. Bye.
Thank you.